This is the story of a girl. What? No, no, it's not. This is episode 116 with Travis Macy. Happy New Year, fam. Happy New Year, Nomads. Happy New Year, UIDers. Happy New Year to every single person out there. What a year it's been. Can't believe we're already at the end of 2015. I'm recording this intro right now, and it is December 30th. And when you listen to this, it's going to be 31st, and many of you will listen to this in a new year. So I just want to remind you all, don't be afraid to give up the good for the great. Make 2016 your best year yet. And as always, I'm accessible. Reach out to me on Twitter at TyRoxin or send me an email with your thoughts at TyRoxin@UYDMag.com. That being said, have some fun, spend time with your family, let your loved ones know that you love them, and enjoy the episode with Travis Macy on how to really be the best version of yourself. See you next year.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tyo Roxin.
Welcome, everybody. Today I have with me Travis Macy, and he's a speaker, author, coach, and professional endurance athlete. He's the author of The Ultra Mindset and Endurance Champion's 8 Core Principles for Success in Business, Sports, and Life. And he holds the record for lead man in epic endurance event consisting of a trail running marathon, 50-mile mountain bike race, Leadville 100 mountain bike race, 10K road run, Leadville 100 run, wow, all above 10,200 in the Rocky Mountains. Travis currently lives with his wife and two young children in the mountains around Evergreen, Colorado, and the Macy's owner and manage a successful education consulting company. Welcome to the show, Travis.
Oh, thanks a lot. It's a pleasure to be here with you today, and great to be with the audience as well.
Thank you. Thank you. That's quite the accomplishment that you've built for yourself there. So you speak, you write, you coach, and then you also do a lot of endurance sports. That's correct.
Yeah. You know, probably like a lot of audience members out there, I'm an entrepreneur, and you know, my wife and I kind of like having multiple income streams, and you know, we also, I think probably like many of your listeners, we like to create work that allows us to live the life that we want to have, you know. So instead of kind of putting work first and then fitting in life around the edges, we like to envision the life that we want to have and then figure out how can we work to support that. So, you know, travel's been a big thing for us, and I've been really lucky as a professional endurance athlete to travel all around the world with racing, and that's led to a lot of family experiences on those trips as well. Our kids are 4 years old and 2 years old, and you know, they're a big part of why we do what we do as well.
Love it. So walk me through the background, because I imagine endurance was probably the first thing you started doing, right? And then how did you sort of, you know, get into everything you do? Because you do a lot of things, but what was the journey like?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. You know, it started off, I'll start with the endurance sports side of things. You know, really it started off for me, I was 5 years old, and I was living here in Colorado in the mountains. My dad, he'd done some endurance racing. He'd done a number of marathons. He'd done the Ironman triathlon, you know, which is a long and challenging and well-known race. But he hadn't done any ultra running yet. And when I say an ultra run, I mean a running race that's longer than a marathon. And so I was 5 years old, and my dad signed up for the Leadville 100 ultra run. This is a high altitude mountain running race on trails outside of Leadville, Colorado, way up in the mountains. And, you know, like I said, my dad had done some stuff, but he hadn't done anything like this. You know, he probably didn't have the appropriate preparation for it, but he had mental toughness, and, you know, that kind of ended up being what got him through. I still remember, you know, 5 years old, like I said, I was out there at Leadville. You know, this is a running race that you have 30 hours to do it. So there's a 30 hours? Yeah, you know, you have to, it starts at 4 a.m. on Saturday, and then you got till 10 a.m. on Sunday to finish this thing. And, you know, typically the winners will do it in, you know, 16, 17, 18 hours. But like I said, my dad, his goal was to finish. And, you know, I still remember 5 years old standing there at the finish line there in Leadville. And if you imagine kind of like an old West cowboy town, you know, out in the middle of nowhere in the mountains, that's what Leadville's like. It's still just this, you know, kind of little untouched place. And, you know, I remember my dad coming up to the finish line there, and, you know, he was very far back in the field and, you know, was barely going to make it under the 30-hour cutoff, but that didn't matter to me. You know, what I saw was someone who was making the most of life, someone who had a gleam in his eye. You know, even though his body was wrecked from running this 100-mile distance, he was still going, and he made it to the finish line. And I just kind of, you know, I remember that feeling as a young child of seeing, you know, this is someone who's pushing his limits and making the most of life and learning something, you know, not only about running, but about his outlook and his marriage and his parenting and his work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just thought that's kind of what I wanted to do. And that was the start for me, you know, at a young age. And then growing up, my dad never pushed me into endurance racing or anything. You know, I played soccer and basketball and baseball and the usual sports, but kind of as I got later into high school, I found distance running and I liked it and found out I was decent at it. And so I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder, and I ran on the cross country and track team there for a couple years. And then after that, I kind of switched to adventure racing, which are these long 5, 6, 7 day races where you're running, mountain biking, kayaking, you know, climbing, kind of all those things mixed into one. Some listeners may remember the Discovery Channel Eco Challenge. You know, it was those kind of races really that I did for the next 10 years, you know, kind of traveling all around the world. And, you know, it's been a pretty neat experience, and I'm still going with it. You know, I have two young kids of my own, and I find right now that doing these ultra distance running races is a good fit for our family. You know, it's a little bit easier to bring your kids to even a 24-hour running race goes a lot faster than some, you know, 6-day adventure race out in the middle of nowhere in China. Anyway, it's been a neat way to see the world, and I've learned a lot from these races that I can apply, you know, to my work as an entrepreneur as well.
Now, and that leads me to this then, because you sent me a book, and I really appreciate you for sending me that. It's really interesting, and it's called The Ultra Mindset and Endurance Champions: 8 Core Principles for Success in Business, Sports, and Life. Now, was it through your, you know, travels and journey as an athlete that you sort of developed these principles?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, these are things that I, you know, either developed or learned from, or, you know, maybe I learned it from someone else out there in the race. Or, you know, I tell a story in, you know, the Adventure Racing World Championship that we did in Sweden a number of years ago, where we had a great team and really we were podium potential, but we ended up making some mistakes, and kind of from those mistakes, I learned one of the key principles that I share in the book, you know, kind of where we went wrong in our thinking. So, you know, these are basically principles from the world of extreme endurance racing, but really the takeaway is how can we apply them to what's important in life? And by that, I mean our relationships, I mean our parenting, I mean our work, you know, our general well-being, all that sort of stuff.
Gotcha. Well, so let's start with the first mindset. The mindset is it's all about good mental training. Can you maybe just, I don't want you to give the book away because I want people to go read it, but can you walk us through give us the mindset at a glance. And
So the idea behind It's All Good Mental Training, this is something that comes from my dad, actually. You know, I told that story about him at the Leadville 100.
Right.
You know, after that race, and really all throughout my childhood, my dad, whenever I was going through something challenging, you know, this could be maybe he and I are out on a bike ride, you know, out in the hills trying to climb up a steep hill, or maybe, you know, it's a challenging school assignment or relationship or something like that. My dad would always say, well, you know, Trav, this is all good mental training. And what he meant by that is, it's a great story to tell yourself when you're going through a challenge. So viewing your challenges as positive and essential elements of building a winning mindset really makes all the difference in the world. And when things are going tough, we have two choices. On the one hand, we can sort of pout about it and put ourselves in a victim mindset of, you know, how hard it is and how much we wish we were doing something else. Or we can shift the story and say, well, this is good mental training. And what we're doing by taking on that challenge, or maybe even a bit of suffering, is building a well of resolve and resilience that we can apply to any other challenge that we face later on.
Gotcha. And then being a wannabe. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So be a wannabe. This is kind of the idea that it's important to get close to the people that you want to be like, or make the most of what psychologists would call goal contagion. So when you're around someone who is achieving or striving for the kinds of goals that you yourself want to achieve, being around them, watching how they find success, learning from those things, really there's a lot of value to it. And I think, you know, sometimes people, you know, especially us entrepreneurs, you know, we kind of get the idea, well, I'm going to go it alone and I'm going to figure out things, you know, my own way. And I think there's a real value to that. But I also think there's a real value to trying to learn from people who have, you know, who've blazed a path. This is something I learned as an athlete, you know, watching other athletes on TV, whether it's, you know, guys like Greg LeMond in the Tour de France, or, you know, Mark Allen in the Ironman. These are guys that I watched when I was a little kid, in addition to, you know, mainstream athletes like Michael Jordan and all those guys. And something I learned from that world and really realized, well, I can apply a lot of this to my business work as well.
Gotcha. And you're basically saying, you know, is it the idea of surrounding yourself or emulating good aspects from other people, that idea of having mentors from afar, and taking qualities that they have, that they share, like me, you know, Michael Jordan's will to win regardless of what, Kobe Bryant's hours of preparation behind the scenes to be as great as he is, or, you know, are you talking about those type of things?
Yeah, that's perfect. And it could, you know, the cool thing about this principle is it can be someone who you're watching from afar, you know, the superstars and all those guys, you know, they become superstars, as you said, through hard work and time. You know, there's probably some degree of talent, but what really sets them apart is the work that they put in. So we can look at people like that, but we can also look at, you know, maybe it's people around us, maybe it's even a competitor in the business world who's achieving some degree of success. Well, let's try to learn, what is that person doing that's making them so successful? And, you know, it's not the idea that you need to be exactly like a given person. It's just simply that, okay, well, we can emulate some of the things that this person is doing that's bringing them success.
Gotcha. No, I completely agree. And this is fascinating to me, because the next thing you say is find your carrot. Now, I imagine, to many people, carrot is something that Bugs Bunny eats, and it has his orange means of sustenance, and obviously, you know, but when you say find a carrot, you mean something different.
Yeah, that's a great question, and this principle, really, it's about intrinsic and extrinsic motivators. And an intrinsic motivator is, you know, basically that we enjoy doing something. So, you know, at the heart of the matter, I choose endurance racing because I love going outside in the mountains and in the woods and running every day. That's inherently enjoyable to me. And I choose entrepreneurial business work because I enjoy doing it. I like connecting with people. I like helping other people. You know, there's many things that I enjoy about it. But I think even if you've chosen something that you enjoy, there's probably going to be times where you're not going to enjoy doing it. You know, when I'm running, you know, let's say a 24-hour running race, if I've run for 15 hours and I still have another 8 to 10 hours to go, I'm probably not really enjoying it, you know, at least in that moment. I may be gaining something from it, but, you know, things hurt and I'm suffering out there. And at those kind of things, whether it's in the running race or in the race of, you know, your work or your relationships or your parenting, those are the kind of times when we can utilize extrinsic motivators. And an extrinsic motivator is something external. So this could be money, it could be glory, it could be admiration, it could be, you know, finishing that marathon because you know when you finish you can post it on Facebook and your friends are going to see it and give you some compliments. If you ask me, if you're doing something big and challenging in life, you're going to need not only the intrinsic motivators, so the, you know, doing it for enjoyment, but you're also going to need those extrinsic motivators as well, or the so-called carrot.
Yeah, and so that's the carrot, the extrinsic. The reason you're saying this because I'm also an athlete. I know I ran track in high school. I remember I went for a sports tournament that was doing the long distance, 1500. I did short distance, long distance, and I did the wire to wire thing. My strategy initially, you know, with 1500, you have to start with endurance and pace yourself.
Yeah.
But I had I got very excited, and I started really just almost sprinting initially for 1500 race, and for some reason I was like, I am not going to fall behind the pack, even though I know what everybody was doing. And then I the motivation was seeing the crowd and seeing the chair and getting the gold, you know, the gold medal all there. But I knew I was exhausted and I was pushing myself beyond what I was doing because I trained weeks to just pace myself and be like second, third, and then I bolted. So when I finally got to the last 100 meters, I was about to collapse. And I just kept thinking, I can't, you know, I don't want to fall down. I can't have my friends laugh at me. And I already imagined myself winning the gold medal. And for some way, more weird reason, that motivated me to push myself through. And then as soon as I crossed the finish line, I just stumbled on the floor and stayed there because I had pushed myself beyond exhaustion. But I knew when it was 100 meters to go that I was past my physical area. So I had to seek something extrinsic, like you were saying. But it's weird when that happens.
Yeah. No, and that's perfect. And I think you touched on the heart of the matter. When you're doing something challenging, when you're doing something, you know, uncomfortable, maybe something that you've never done before, you're going to need all the motivation that you can gain. You know, you probably had some intrinsic motivation that you enjoyed running, but at the very end there, like you said, the last 100 meters, you know, you got to grab anything you can hang on to. And if the gold medal and the people cheering for you, if that was going to get you there, then that's perfect.
Okay. Now we're done with three here, but the fourth mindset you have, it's sort of leads into, ties into what you were saying earlier, but this is having an ego and use it. A lot of people have this mindset that being egotistical is a bad thing. Can you dispel that? Because you're saying that you should have an ego and you should use it until it's time to put your ego aside. That's your fourth mindset. What do you mean by that?
Well, so what I mean by this is, you know, when I say have an ego, I you know, I don't mean an ego as far as like treating other people badly. What I mean is having an ego as far as a very high view of yourself and what you can accomplish. I think that accomplishing big goals requires perseverance, and that in turn requires a high view of yourself. If we're going to take on great challenges in life, whether it's business or athletics or another area, sometimes we may be taking on a challenge that, according to our resume, we don't actually have any business challenging, taking on. Like we may not have the experience on paper to be undertaking what it is that we're trying to do. But if you ask me, I think that's okay. I think sometimes we need to push beyond, you know, what we should be capable of doing according to experience or degree or talent or, you know, whatever the case might be. And I think in these cases, when you really are taking on something big, what you really need is an unfaltering belief in yourself, mm-hmm. and belief that you can and will do it no matter what. You know, when I sat down to write this book, I had a lot of ideas, and I knew that I had it in me. I had some writing experience, but I had never written a book before, and I didn't have a publisher. I didn't have an agent. You know, I didn't know exactly how the process worked. But what I did have was a commitment to myself and a belief that I could and would make it through. And many times along the way, that was the only thing that kept me going. So that's kind of the whole have an ego. And then on the other side of it, I say, until it's time to put your ego aside. And just as important as having a very high view of yourself that you can accomplish whatever you set your mind to, it's also very important to be able to set that ego aside, especially when it comes to asking for help. And sometimes we find help in the strangest of places. You know, maybe in the business world, it's you know, coming to someone who's a so-called subordinate of yours and asking them for help in, you know, accomplishing something or carrying out a certain procedure. For me, what I talk about in the book is, you know, I realized at one point that I needed a coach. I needed someone to be coaching me in my endurance racing so that I could get to the next level. And as I started to think about, well, who's best suited for that, it turned out to be one of my arch rivals, you know, a guy that I was competing against a lot, but I realized he was having a great degree of success and was doing well with coaching athletes. So that's who I came to and asked for help. And, you know, it was kind of an ironic place to turn, but ended up being a great place. So that's kind of the idea, is you have this high view of yourself, but you know, readily extinguish that ego and ask for help when you need it.
No, I love that, because I always say the difference between ego and self and overconfidence is, you know, ego is, like you said, belief in yourself. And if you don't believe in yourself, not a lot of people will. But the overconfidence is, you know, you don't want to get to that point where you're confident to the point where you're looking down on others, because it's, there's a fine line with that. And like you said, there's nothing wrong with that, having an ego, but you have to also be aware of what you're doing in relation to other people, whether you're not putting out on people. And then I think the thing that I enjoyed the most was humbling yourself enough to ask for help, because mm-hmm. that's the only way you can actually improve in some, you know, to get over some challenges, or that you might reach your plateau or peak, you know, whether it's training or whatever you're doing. But it helps even when you're traveling. You said you traveled a lot. I find that a lot of times when I find myself in different countries, I have to ask for help. I'm one of the most directionally challenged people I know. So
I think one of my favorite things about asking for help is, usually people are happy to help. You know, it's a fulfilling thing to be able to help someone. And most people, you know, even if they don't show it at the outset, most people are happy to help. And I, you know, back to the travel, I remember I was in Korea, you know, South Korea, and there's nothing in English. And, you know, we're in this huge city of Seoul and trying to figure out our way around, and, you know, nothing's familiar. And, I was asking for help around every corner, and people were usually happy. You know, even I didn't speak Korean, they didn't speak English, but somehow we figured it out, and, you know, we made it there.
Gotcha. No, I completely agree. I love it. And that, now, when you finally let your ego aside, how do you adjust your thinking?
You know, I think I think it's just, you know, it's continuing to have the confidence to realize that it's okay to ask for help. You know, I think that part of sometimes we're, you know, culture convinces us to take on a certain, you know, persona, whereas it's not okay to ask ourselves for help, and sort of realizing that when you ask for help, that's not a degrading thing to do to yourself. It's actually a sign of having the confidence to know that you're seeking out growth. So I think that's a big piece of it, is just really seeking growth and always seeking forward progress, and keeping in mind that that's more important than, you know, proving that you're smart or capable. It's more important to continue to actually move forward and get smarter and get more capable.
Gotcha. Now, Mindset 5, what is that about?
Well, so Mindset 5 in the book reads, think about your thinking, what and why. And this sort of, you know, if we go back to your 1500 meter run experience, oftentimes in a running race, and this could be, again, you know, the real running race or as I said, the running race of life. Oftentimes, you know, at the beginning of it, we're highly motivated by why we are doing it. You know, we're doing it because we're all hyped up and there's music playing at the starting line and, you know, we've trained hard and prepared and we have a lot of enthusiasm. And that's natural to think about something like that at the start of a race or at the start of an undertaking. But my advice is to usually start off, whether it's starting the race or maybe let's say in the work situation, you're starting off with something that's very detail oriented, you know, let's say editing a document or creating a business plan, or, you know, in my case, climbing a steep mountain. When you're doing something like that, that's detail oriented, my advice is to really focus your thinking on what you're doing. So in other words, pay attention to what you're doing. And for you, you know, in that back to that track running race, you know, pay attention to how fast are you going? Are you going too fast or are you going the right pace? And I do that all the time. You know, in my, you know, my 50-mile running race, I had to really pay attention to make sure I'm going the right speed at the start and I'm not going to be too burned out. So that's the what. You know, again, when you're doing something that's detail-oriented, you want to think about what you're doing. But when things get drawn out and grueling and challenging, that's when you want to shift from the focus on the painful what to the why. So in other words, shifting to why you're doing it. So, you know, you're still at the office on a Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock and you have a few more things that you have to do. That's a good time to focus on why you're doing it. You know, you're doing it because, you know, you want to get that promotion or because you want to be proud of the work you did or because you want to make more money or because you want to, you know, finish up the work so that you can go home and have a weekend with your kids where you're not thinking about work. Those would all be good things to shift your why thinking. So, you know, it's kind of around when do we think about what we're doing and when's the best time to think about why we're doing it.
No, that's good. That's good. You know, painful what we focus on, why we're doing it. And then the mindset 6 is the 4:30 a.m. rule. When you have no choice, anything is possible.
Yeah. So this is, you know, again, you know, a kind of a training metaphor here. You know, many people who train for endurance sports or maybe, you know, it could be any interest or profession you have. Sometimes we have to get up early to get things done. And my view of it is the night before when you set your alarm, you know, whether it's 4:30 a.m. or 5 a.m. or 6 or, you know, if 7 a.m. is early for you, whatever you're setting that time for, when you set the alarm, that's when you're making the commitment to getting up and accomplishing the work. You're not going to wait until the alarm goes off to see how you feel like, see what you feel like, and then decide if you want to do it or not. And, you know, that's a literal interpretation, but we can also take this metaphorically that oftentimes in our lives, there are things that we don't feel like doing in the moment. But if we've committed ahead of time to accomplishing that task, whether or not we feel like it, it's going to be a lot easier to do. You know, it's so much easier to make it through a challenge if you know that quitting is not an option, because in that case, you just keep going forward. And I think that can be applied to, you know, starting your own business, for example. You make the commitment to it. There's probably going to be moments where you're not having a whole lot of fun or things aren't going well. But if you've committed to it, you simply keep going and usually you'll make it out and things will turn out okay.
It also helps with the discipline too, right? Once you just, you know that you have to wake up at this time. And then just whether you want to do it or not, you just transition yourself and you position your mindset into thinking, all right, I'm up, let's go. And then that's what happens. Once you do it, it becomes a habit.
Yeah, you're right. And I think one of the cool things about that is, you know, the discipline that you earn from the particular habit. And again, it doesn't have to be 4:30 a.m. Maybe your 4:30 a.m. time is, you know, 10 at night. That's when you go to the gym because, you know, that's the only time you have and you don't feel like going, but you still go. You know, every time you do that, you become more conditioned to persevere when you face another challenge in another area of life.
No, it's good. Good. You were breaking up there a little bit, so I don't know if it's I don't know what happened. Can you say something so I can see if it works better?
Yeah, yeah. How are we going now? Does that sound okay?
Yes, it sounds sounds better. So
okay,
good. Great. All right. All right, and now to wrap up the two mindsets before we get into some of the other personal things about your life is 7 and 8. What 7 starts with your bad stories, good stories, the ones you tell yourself make all the difference. What does that mean?
Yeah, you know, the idea here is, in a nutshell, we all have voices inside of our head, and I think that it's important to listen to those voices, this self-talk that's going on. And if those voices aren't helping you, if they aren't doing a good job in propelling you forward in life, then you should probably fire those voices and hire other ones. In other words, rewrite the stories that you're telling yourself. And I talk about in the book, you know, kind of some steps that you can go through to work through those. And with my coaching clients, we're often analyzing the stories that they have going on in their head, whether those are around athletics or work or relationships or other things. But I think there's a real value to considering the stories that you're telling yourself and realizing oftentimes we are our harshest critics. You know, if you imagine some of the things that you say to yourself, you know, what if you said those to someone working with you or to your spouse or, you know, to your children? Sometimes they're pretty harsh things that we can say to ourselves, and eliminating those and replacing them with better stories really can make a difference.
Yeah, no, love it. Just telling you, you can, the way you know, you think, I think, therefore I am. I can't remember who said that. It was, I think it was one of the great philosophers of the time. But it's the stories you tell yourself, sometimes you can, it can really make the difference, like you're saying. And if you end up being a negative type of person, it's, you're going to end up having that negative mindset, and then you start to believe some of the stuff you say, even if it's not true or not.
Yep. Yep.
And the last one is never quit except when you should quit.
Yeah. Huh. So the idea about this is that if you're doing something you really care about, and this is something that you know aligns with your true self, your highest purposes in life, that you really shouldn't quit that just because you fear what will happen if you continue. You know, oftentimes when you're going big, whether it's through travel or sports or business or other things, that's just part of the deal. Fear is going to be there, and my advice is to keep on going anyway. On the other hand, if you're doing something with your life that doesn't align with who you want to be and how you want to live, then maybe you should quit. And I think a lot of times in life, and I've faced some moments like this myself, I think people face moments where, you know, they have a course that looks like the logical or secure or natural thing to do, but maybe they don't really believe in it. Maybe that's not who they want to be. And I think in those cases, true courage is overcoming fear to spend your life in what you believe to be a purposeful manner and the way that you want to exist in the world.
Yeah, love it, love it. And thank you for going through those 8 principles. And the reason I wanted to do that was just to give the audience a glimpse of what I was able to read and what you talk about, because it's, I think it's truly a phenomenal book, and it's why it's been successful on the charts here. But in the thing that I really picked up on was you live your life the way you talk, the way you write the book, because you're a professional athlete, you're now a successful author, and then you've got all these, you know, you've got all these priorities, and you also have family, and then you have, I think, 6 weeks of vacations every summer in Europe.
Yeah. Well, last summer we went to Europe for 6 weeks, and you know, travel's huge for us, and you know, thankfully, as self-employed entrepreneurs, we're able to travel quite a bit more than 6 weeks every year. So yeah, you know, whether it's Europe or, you know, earlier this year we went to Costa Rica and had about a month there, and that was really cool. And I think you know, some of it goes back to stories. Sometimes people have kids and they tell themselves, well, now we have kids so we can't travel, or
yeah,
you know, now we have kids so we can't do that, or now, you know, now I own a house, so I, you know, all I can do is work, or wherever these stories are. These are all just possible stories, and if you want to live a different story, usually you can.
So you essentially, how do you find time for all that? You prioritize?
Yeah, I mean, prioritizing is a big thing. Also, I would say, cutting, I've cut out a lot of things from my life that I think some people spend a lot of time with. You know, one obvious thing is TV. You know, you see all these things. The average American watches, you know, 4 hours of TV per day or something like that. I mean, in 4 hours, 4 hours a day, you can be a professional athlete. You know, I'll tell you that. Like, I spend well less than 4 hours each day running, and, you know, I'm able to compete at a pretty high level. So it's intentionally cutting out things like that. It's, you know, I don't spend a whole lot of time with like social media, for example. You know, I use it some as a professional tool, but I, you know, personally, as far as friendships go, I'd rather just talk to one of my friends or be with them than try to spend a lot of time doing that. Or let's say commuting. We've been able to cut commuting in a car out of our schedule for the most part, and that frees up a lot of time. We've also cut out, you know, trying to, I guess maybe this isn't cutting things out, but more of making a shift to trying to live simply. So live in a way where there aren't as many costs as far as housing or owning things. And if you don't need to spend as much money on things, then you don't need to earn as much money, and you don't need to spend, you know, as much time working. And so that, you know, that's been a way to open up time for travel, and, you know, making sure I can go out and run every day or go on a hike with my kids outside, because those are important things to me.
All right. So prioritizing cutting and, you know, really just avoid buying too much and spending money on things you don't need to be spending.
Yeah, I'd say those are all key pieces for sure.
Okay. Now, you have a interesting definition of sports. What is sports to you?
What is sports?
Yeah, it's in your world, it's adventure racing.
Yeah, team, yeah.
And when we were converting over email, I remember you saying that when you explain sports, you define it as I think it was 24 hours in a fixed course, 100 miles at altitude, and not just, you know, rip roaring downhill that you see on trails. So it's like a very intense experience for you. So yeah, I'm curious if you could explain that.
Yeah, well, those happen to be the sports I participate in. You know, I'm a sports person. I like mainstream sports, and my 4-year-old son, you know, he started playing soccer this year, and so, you know, I like those kind of things. But the sports I compete in, yeah, they're typically long distance races in the mountains. So these could be running races where, you know, you're running 100 miles over the course of 20 hours or so.
I still can't believe that. I guess what I'm curious about is how those things are sometimes more than a day. How do you sleep? Do you just run continuously for 24 hours or 30 hours? Is that a rest period, or is that an understanding among you and the other competitors that, okay, we're taking a break now?
Yeah, no, those are great questions. And most of the races are nonstop races. So typically, wow, in the course of a 100-mile running race, you wouldn't sleep. You would literally run all night long. You know, some of it might be walking. Like I said, these races are in the mountains, you know, so you're out in the middle of nowhere in the woods, you know, going up a hill. And if it's a really steep hill, you might be walking some, but you're still moving. And then you get to the top and you'd, you know, go down the other side, and then you'd be running because it's a little easier to go downhill. But yeah, you're going nonstop. So you're eating, you're drinking along the way, you know, you're stopping to use the bathroom. But other than that, you're still moving over that whole period of time. Some of the, you know, the longer races, some of these adventure races I've done, these are week long races, where they're nonstop racing. And over the course of a week, you really should sleep some. So typically in those races, you know, you're maybe sleeping, let's say, 2 to 4 hours a night, but you're still doing it, you know, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. You know, you're typically pretty tired and sleep deprived, so you lie down and you fall asleep pretty quickly. You know, even if you're lying in a pile of rocks or if your head's in the mud or something.
That's so impressive. I don't even know. I mean, I know we just talked about mindset and the negative stories, so I'm trying not to say that. So yeah, I can do it, but wow, yeah, that is so impressive. But and this something that we do on the podcast, I hear a lot, just talk about how we're using our differences to make a difference. And you've given eight examples of how you do that. But I'm curious if you could condense it into a sentence or so. How do you use your difference to make a difference?
I'm really motivated to help people, and I've tried to choose work that allows me to do that. You know, I worked for a number of years as a high school teacher, and I picked up a lot of things out there with helping people. And like I said, you know, helping people, it's altruistic because you get to help someone else, but it's also fulfilling to yourself when you get to help someone. So I really like speaking to people. You know, whenever I get to go in front of a crowd, let's say before one of these ultra running races, and kind of give them sort of a pep talk, that it lights my fire too, because I feel happy, because I know I'm supporting them in reaching their goals. So, you know, really that's my goal. That's why I wrote the book, is, you know, hopefully people will gain something from it that they can improve their lives in one way or another. And, that's a big piece of what I try to do.
Love it. Love it. So where can we find out more about what you do? Where can we get your book, your website, and maybe, I don't know, maybe come support you in your next race as well?
Yeah, no, seriously, if you want to come out and support a race, drop me a line. And that's a big piece, because when you do these races, you know, you need a support crew, you need people to drive to the next, the next checkpoint and have your food and water and stuff like that. And it's a pretty supporting these races is awesome. It's a really neat experience. And I mean, it totally blows your mind, and you'll see people doing things that you can't even believe. But anyway, that's the side note. You know, the way to find out about me, the website is travismacy.com. That's spelled Travis, M-A-C-Y. And on that site, the book's on there. Information about my coaching and racing and stuff are there. And then the book itself, The Ultra Mindset, you can find out about that on my site, or it's on Amazon, Kindle, Audible. It's also in, you know, bookstores, Barnes & Noble, and you know, those kind of places if you like to just go into a store and get it.
Oh, love it. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. This has honestly been a very interesting and eye-opening experience for me, because you affirmed a lot of the things I believe, but you put them in such – you eloquated them in a way that I probably wouldn't be able to put them into words, so – thank you so much, and I can't wait to get this out there and make sure people understand more about what you do and get your book in their bookshelves.
Well, thanks, Teo. It's been a pleasure, and it's like I said, it's been great to be along with you and just see the life that you're pursuing and the things that you've done, and, you know, just finishing your MBA. I mean, I'm sure that getting through something like that, there's a lot of times where it really takes some resilience and mental toughness. So I congratulate you on it.
Well, thank you so much, and I can't wait to hear that you broke a world record somewhere. And I'm like, I interviewed that guy. So, but thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time.
Okay. All right, man. Have a good one.
You too.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.